thuyền vương mây ngàn răng khắp lối.
Của nỗi buồn, của chia tay, của những mối tình dang dở. Ở tuổi còn đi học, những nam sinh vẫn có những kỷ niệm đến đứng ngẩn ngơ ở cổng trường con gái như những cửa trường Gia Long, Sương Nguyệt Ánh hay Trưng Vương. Để rồi, em tan trường về, mưa bay mờ mờ, anh trao vội vàng, chùm hoa mới nở, ép vào cuốn vở. Người con gái như đóa hoa hồng, hoa băng xê, hoa mimosa hay hoa phượng hồng như môi em. Một nụ hôn đầu ngất ngay, để rồi nhung nhớ mãi mãi về sau. Mùa hạ đến, rồi mối tình chia ly vì lý do nào đó. Để rồi khi sang mùa thu, mùa tụ trường, cô gái Trưng Vương nhìn lá vàng rơi ngoài đường, theo gió heo may vi vu, để nhớ đến người bạn trai xưa với nụ hôn đầu nồng nàn. Nhà thơ nữ Nguyễn Thị Lệ Thanh đã sáng tác bài thơ Trưng Vương Khung Cửa Mùa Thu, và nhạc sĩ Nam Lộc đã soạn thành một ca khúc để ghi dấu những mối tình nhẹ nhàng, nỗi bâng khuâng, những xao xuyến của tuổi học trò.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
Sunday morning in 1942, a mother was blessed with a son who grew up to be young, gifted and brown, with the strength to tear a mountain down, with a voice so young and clear, a chance for everyone to hear. Yeah,
young, gifted and proud.
And as he grew up,
and welcome to the Filipino American National News. I'm Alan Bunju. For those of you that might not be aware, it is Filipino American History Month. And before the month began, I put out a call on social media to the various community leaders of the Filipino organizations in town. And the first person who agreed to come on the air as someone that is a familiar voice, if you know the history of the Philippine American National News. And our guest tonight is the president of the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans, Tony Winnig. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be back.
And when he says back, for our listeners, to give a little history lesson on the Philippine American National News, when I got involved many moons ago, Tony was the producer and host of the Filipino American National News. So everything comes full circle.
Yeah, it's about a 25-year circle and turn in that circle. But it's been quite a while. Kind of reacquainting myself with everything, the sights, the sounds, and the activities. The machines look actually quite the same. Maybe more computers, but the board itself looks pretty much the same, switches and dials and slides.
And Tony, as we mentioned earlier, is the president of the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans. And if my memory serves me correctly, Tony will be entering his third term as the president in this current cycle.
I believe this is actually the fourth.
The fourth, okay.
This is the fourth. So I will be at the kind of matching the record as far as number of years as president. I have to maybe check my math. I have to see how many speeches and dances I've done. But, I will be kind of tying the record for the longest termed president, although there had been two other individuals who had been president for 4 years, but they were president in split terms. So, Mine is the first straight four.
And Tony, for our listening audience that is not familiar with the mission or the objectives of the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans, what can you tell us about the CSFA as it's known?
Well, okay, so the CSFA, the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans, which we shorten as a very Filipino way of doing it to go to the acronym CSFA. You know, I don't have the mission statement perfectly memorized, but it's to promote and, you know, support the Filipino community as through arts, philanthropy, involvement in community events. So really, one of the bailiwicks to the CSFA has been to highlight the Filipino culture and ethnic history through through dance and some of the more artistic endeavors, as opposed to something like more the political, or, you know, certainly we support political and racial justice, but really, when you get down to it, our pride and joy is our dance troupe, our Philippine Day event, as well as doing our camps to support the children of the Filipino community, kind of show them their personal identity, of their history and ethnicity. We've carried that into to now a teen group, to also celebrate and learn more in-depth parts of their, very often duality, much like myself, Filipino-American identities. And then we have certain events that have been carried on for now well over 50 years, or well over 35 to 50 years, which is the social aspect, just getting together in our membership meetings to share time, food, and stories with our friends in the community, and then also to just kind of carry on as a small community group, sharing our hopes and dreams to carry forward.
Antonio, you spoke about how children have gotten involved with dance. How were you first initially getting involved with the CSFA?
So I was a very young child. The CSFA was founded in 1972. Now there's a couple kind of, you know, origin stories to it, but the long and short of it, it was founded in 1972, and at that time I was 3 or 4 years old. My mother and father happened to be part of that founding group of members. They were the ones that came together. They were probably in their mid-20s, maybe later 20s, as were many of the other Filipino members that created the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans. And they were looking for something a little bit different than some of the other Filipino groups at the time, which were very kind of politically minded to a certain extent, and then also kind of in the very Filipino way, society minded, kind of going through some of the cliques and other forms that aren't unusual to many communities, but they were looking for something a little bit more loose, and certainly something a bit more Filipino-oriented as far as the dance, which is really one of the kind of one of the things that separated them very early on, was their celebration of Filipino dancing and ethnic dancing. So my parents being founders of it, I was attending some of the very early meetings as one of the many young kids that would be running around at these very family-oriented membership meetings. And as a result, I've probably attended over 40 years of meetings in my lifetime, attending them, even if I was just a kid running around, later to become a teenager, kind of listening in every once in a while, and then certainly as a young adult, actually participating in the management or the growth of the group.
And as you said, you've essentially been there from the beginning as a very young kid. What in your brain switched in regards to, you know, going to these events, and whether it's forced or even involved in it, what part of you decided to say, hey, maybe I want to give a little bit more to the group?
There's a couple different levels where I kind of my personal growth. You know, certainly as a young child of a dance group, and the Festival of Nations was a different creature very early in that day. So unfortunately, it's gone now. But in that, in the early 70s or mid 70s, when we were involved, it was actually almost an Olympic event every 4 years. And it was at the St. Paul Civic Center, when instead of the Xcel Energy Center, it was the big round Civic Center. And then the River Center was, what's the theater there? I forget the name of it. But anyway, they had a very theatrical event. And I do recall it at that time being part of that dance troupe. Now, my guess is certainly I would be pressed into service by my parents. At that age, you know, my mom being a dancer, I was probably brought in with many of the other young kids, taught the tinnikling, and performed that among with many of the other kids. And I know that I participated lightly for a while. But then about junior high school, I really did stop. There were many events that the CSFA had that I do recall that I would have been of age, but just wasn't there. Post-college, now interesting, I went to University of Illinois, which had a very strong Filipino community. Yeah. And a very large group. I was not part of that. I regret that to this day, that I never sought them out. Now, it would have been a bit of a foreign community to me. I didn't know any of them like I would have known Filipinos here from the Twin Cities area. But I did miss out on an opportunity, and I recognize that now. I recognize it actually after I graduated. And so when I got back to Minnesota, I did actually endeavor to start involving myself in the dance troupe aspect. I returned at a time that one of the pamanas were being produced. Now, the pamana, for those who don't know, was an occasional every 4 year cycle also event that was produced by the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans. It was basically a 2 hour produced event. It went from high school theater performances to, I believe we performed at Hamline University Theater, University of Minnesota Theater, and some of our most recent in the past decade and a half, they were at the Ames Center in Burnsville, you know, much larger 1,000-seat theater. And during that, you know, it was performances of many of the different dances of the Filipino ethnic experience, for anything from the rural communities to the Maria Clara, the Spanish-influenced dances of society people, and then many of the tribal dances, because there's, you know, the Philippines is a large collection of islands and cultures put together, so you can get very distinct tribal differences, and those would be much more animistic or beat-driven songs and dances. After I joined that pamana as a dancer, it was not too long before I kind of said, well, I'm ready to kind of actually help out with my skills, you know, as a college-educated person. So I actually joined in at that time, and that's first role was to be the treasurer, and that was early 2000s.
And with the Philippines being an archipelago of many different islands, you stated that there's many different dance styles. Do you think that's something that appeals to not only yourself but others who get involved in the CSFA dance troupe, that it's not just pigeoned into one style of dancing, where I think in some other cultures you just might see one particular style?
That is, you know, it's very fun on our side to kind of present those differences. Admittedly, the very easy ones for us to present and to a degree, the more palatable ones are the rural, we call them rural, something much more to the common farmer of the Philippines. kind of waltzy, Spanish influenced, but not society level, but a very standard dance beat. And I can't say that they're not influenced by Spanish, but when we teach them their waltzes. When we talk about some of the tribal dances from the mountain cultures of the Igorot and Ifugao to the southern peninsula tribes, that is much more visceral, beat-driven, imitation of animals. That's why I said animistic. You know, we're working on a dance right now, or we've previewed one, and we're trying to teach now, which is roosters fighting for a hen, but we have the Muslim dances, which often tell tales or, play out a mythology. Those are all, unique. They are fun to do. They create difficulties as a dance troupe because that is, it takes different skill levels of dancers, and we're all volunteers. We're just all people who put together, our own time to learn these dances and perform these dances at many different events. And sometimes we hit a block. We don't have enough dancers. We don't, the big Singkil dance, which is a Muslim dance with, when it's most majestic, it's a troupe of 25 to 30 people that are needed to put that together. And sometimes you just don't have enough. We have those challenges. Though when we do find the opportunities, the Pamanas or the Sayao Namin events, which, was a recorded time where we took to videotaping our dances, it does give us the opportunity to really kind of put up some interesting dances.
And one of the places where people will see many of these different dances that the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans practice and perform is what is commonly known as the biggest one-day event in the Filipino-American community here in Minnesota, and that is Philippine Day, which used to take place in the early spring but now has moved outside and into parks. What sort of undertaking does it take to plan such a grand event like Philippine Day?
So the Philippine Day history used to be, as you mentioned, in the spring, indoors at Landmark Center, and it's certainly took a quite a bit of time and planning. Its current form now is an outdoor summer event, food trucks galore, performance stage, a palenque or a bazaar, and then an exhibition space. And that's all the last few years it's been at Ojibwe Park in Woodbury, and we'll be again there next year. The planning, as we've learned, never stops. The lessons I've learned as I've taken over trying to run that is like, okay, you're never too early to start laying down the groundwork. So we have already next year's event planned for Saturday, July 19th in 2025. And we already have a soft date for 2026. And, even part of that planning is like, as we watch our crowds at Ojibwe Theater get larger and larger, from the 2,000 to the 3,000 attendees, we're just watching to make sure we never burst the seams there, or if we do, where do we go? So we've already have some irons in the fire as far as locations to watch, should we need to find more space for such an event.
And do you feel events such as a Philippine Day or Pamana in the past when it has gone on, or any events, do you feel that those events have helped draw more people to get involved in the organization, or does it take some prodding with people, with their friends?
it takes prodding. In any case, in both cases, it will take prodding. There is certainly a lot of enthusiasm to help, but there is some reticence to step forward, especially if you don't have the experience. There's like, oh, I'd like to help out. Well, you can volunteer. Okay, well, I'll come the day of. Well, you could actually help volunteer throughout the year. there's plenty of opportunity. So they're not unusual as far as, you know, the subject matter changes. But, you know, the CSFA's Philippine Day is very much an outdoor festival, much like the Thai New Year and the night market and other similar events. It's not unusual in the overall form, just the theme changes. And ours is unique in that it is really the only Philippine-centric event of that size and that nature. There is one other one. I'll give a fair shake to Lumpia Days up in, I believe it, Andover.
Chaplin,
in Anoka. And that's just a newer one, much smaller, but they are very focused. They have the Lumpia as their Lumpia eating contests and stuff. So that also has its event, but there are two different events. The CSFA's Philippine Day still eclipses the other one by quite a margin.
And in the past, full disclosure, me to a very limited extent, my younger sister, my daughter, and my nieces, they've been involved as dancers into the Cultural Society of Filipino Americans. And in the past, you guys have practiced at Bethany Baptist Church, the Philippine Center in Minnesota, and currently now you practice at what is known as the CSFA Warehouse. Has that been a big plus in terms of, for you guys having it at that venue?
It has been. As the group has grown, you know, the demands changed, and it became one of those where we were utilizing the Philippine Center in Maplewood, and it certainly served its purpose. It gave us a space to use. We had, we're involved as we're a partner organization in it, so we still are supportive of it, and still involve ourselves in some of the events. But we found difficulty in actually having to share the space, especially given kind of how much costume sprawl and props sprawl we actually have. We've actually got quite a bit of assets, and we had difficulty collecting them into a single location. And when the opportunity came for us to utilize a warehouse in Burnsville, it really kind of gave the opportunity and for the CSFA to put some roots down, spread out, keep things collected in a single location rather than try to catch them from, you know, homes throughout the Twin Cities and then run up to the warehouse and the PCM. So to that aspect, you know, it was really another step in kind of our growth as a group. It does put new demands on the group. Certainly the cost is something that as president, I've discussed with the group. It's like, this is now a new expense we're going to have to keep in mind as we go through this, that this is something that regardless of where we go, we're going to have to deal with kind of the expense and the maintenance of a lot of these materials. And we need to kind of focus at different times. We can expand when the opportunity arises. Philippine Day is kind of putting new demands for new capital for the CSFA to collect, and now we need to keep it somewhere in between those events. So that said, it also kind of gives us a place to put our flag down and allow other people to kind of say, okay, with predictability, where can we go to involve ourselves with the CSFA, practice, learn some dances, you know, just kind of involve ourselves. And it's all in the one location in Burnsville.
And before we come close to the end of the show, one of the events that is coming up in the next couple of weeks is your guys' induction ball. Can you tell us a little bit more about that event?
So any good Filipino is going to want to have a good party when they have the opportunity and the excuse. And so our annual excuse was the Filipino induction or the CSFA's induction of officers to be held this year, October 26th at the Sheraton Hotel in Bloomington. This will be our time for our new officers, our newly elected officers, to take